This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Property Show on The Morning Run. It's our weekly take on all things property related. I'm Sim Wee Boon. 2020 has been a tumultuous year, to say the least. From a pandemic to a change in the government here, much has happened in the past 9 months. Now, as we close off Q3 and kickstart Q4, how has the property landscape changed? How are buyers, property developers, you and me faring as the Malaysian economy recovers? I'll be touching a bit on these topics today with Dr. Carmelo Felito, CEO of the Centre for Market Education and Senior Fellow at Ideas. Welcome to the show, Doctor.
Hi, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
So before we get into how are things like now, let's rewind a bit. What's your take on the government's incentive and how it has weighed on the property landscape?
I think that there has been a lot of enthusiasm on the home ownership campaign, and some instruments have been deployed to try to help the market. But I think that probably the effect of such measures has been overestimated. And so I think that in the end, the actual effect, considering also the difficulties that were brought in by the pandemic, the movement restrictions, and so on, I think that the effect has been quite limited. But having said that, allow me to say that I'm not surprised about this. And I'm also, if you want, satisfied about this modest result, because I believe that it's not government task, the one to try to revive certain industries. I mean, entrepreneurs are in the market. They should make decisions, investment decisions that are consistent with the market needs. And if the products they provide are not met by the demand, they should pay the consequences. And this in every kind of business, in properties like in food, if you make a pizza at a price or with a taste that nobody wants, then you cannot ask for the government to help you to sell your pizzas, you know.
So given the Panjana incentives that the government of the day kickstarted to address the pandemic and its economic fallout, do you feel that they were more, they helped the property developers more, or did they help the Malaysian people more?
To be fair, the government tried to help everybody in the country. You know that if I have to be critic of the government, I don't spare my criticism. But in this case, I think that to say that the government tried to help unilaterally the developers would not be fair. There have been a lot of measures that tried to help all the people that were struggling, and obviously the construction sector has been affected like all the other businesses. So to be fair, I think that there has been the attempt to try to help the generality of the racket.
But did measures like the RGBT exemption, the financing limit, did these really touch and make a real effect on rejuvenating the property market?
No, I don't think so. And I've mentioned this before. I think that this kind of solutions has a very limited impact on the decisions to purchase or not to purchase a property. So I think that what's going on in the property market is mainly affected by the peculiarity of the cycle that the property market is going through, the different stages of this cycle, and by the general economic conditions. And at this point, I think that every kind of policy would have a very limited effect for what is in the power of the government.
Mm, okay. I mean, of course, you know, when you ask on the ground, perhaps the most visible effect that the government had in terms of what they did was the loan moratoriums. And by the time this interview airs, it would have been 2 days since it was lifted. What do you think about it? Like, should it have been extended further, maybe towards the end of the year, or is this targeted approach much better?
I believe that the targeted approach is better, and I tell you why. When there was the first extension of the moratorium, I spoke in favor of the extension. I looked at the it as a necessary move. But then, as we move forward with the duration of the emergency scenario, and we prolong the stimuli, we have to realize that also the needs of the banks be taken into account. So the more the measures are prolonged, the more it becomes difficult to balance, you know, the needs from the people that that benefit from the loan moratorium and the effort that is required to the bank system. Therefore, I believe that a targeted approach in which situations are decided cases by cases is the right way to go. And probably, and I think wherever we go for yearly elections or if we go ahead with this government, what we need to think next in general, not only for the property market, is a sort of exit strategy. We can't go ahead with subsidies and loan moratorium forever, and at the same time, we can't remove them overnight. So I think that we should imagine a sort of a bridge policy between the period with incentives and the future without incentives.
Apart from the moratorium, another big part of how the government looked to rejuvenate the property sector was the home ownership campaign. From various people I've talked to, it seemed that it was quite effective. But like, what do you think about the home ownership campaign? Was it the right move for the government to do?
I think that the government did what they could do. Again, I think that we should not put too many expectations in the result of this. It's good for the government to bring together buyers and suppliers to try to facilitate transactions. But then, again, the priority in sorting out this issue should remain in the market. And I think that also probably in the future the government should look at different priority as also the pandemic is stretching further into 2021. As I mentioned also in other occasions in the past, I think that home ownership is not really a priority in this moment, in particular if compared with household debt. So the two things are somehow two different sides of a coin. So they are part of a trade-off analysis. And looking at the numbers of home ownership in Malaysia and household debt, I think that the government should give as a priority, should have as a priority to address household debt rather than home ownership.
And what kind of policies or moves do you think the government can look into address things like household debt then? Because it seems a big part of their concern has always been surrounding home ownership. But you, and I think several others, have always mentioned to look back or peer into household debts.
Because home ownership in Malaysia is already close to 80%. So it's one of the highest in the world. But at the same time, household debt is something close to 85% of the GDP. So it's quite a concerning number. And I think the first move that could be done, and this is absolutely in the scope of what the government could and should do, is improving financial literacy. So to find a way to address a mentality that is very much oriented to fast consumption, but at the expenses of savings that are very much necessary to face uncertain futures, in particular in a moment like the present one. So improving financial literacy is one of that. And second, to address together with Bank Negara the regulation according to which loans are actually issued. Because we have absolutely to avoid what happened around 15 years ago in the Western world when basically loans were given out for almost for free at even at 120% of the value of properties. This creates financial instability, and the consequences of this are under the eyes of everybody, the big financial crisis in 2007, 2008.
And finally, before we go for a break, I know one of the issues that you have been very passionate about is the proposed vacancy tax that the Housing and Local Government Ministry mulled. The minister have since said that it's been put on the back burner, but I'm bringing this up because the tax was touted initially as a way to address unsold property. What are your thoughts on this? And, you know, what are some of the other measures that the government could consider to address the issue of unsold property then?
Yes, this is a quite a complex issue, and I'm happy actually that the tax idea was abandoned. But, you know, first of all, there is the nature of what the tax is. If you look at the tax is always going to be imposed over a profit or over a benefit that someone is enjoying. If you are in the presence of unsold properties, which kind of benefit or profit are you going to tax? This is taxing a loss, basically. So what is missing is the very nature of the tax. So the developer is already suffering because he's not selling those properties. So why should he be further punished? So this was one of my main arguments against the vacancy tax. Then I recognize that there is an issue of overhang and unsold properties, but I want to stress that this is an issue of the developers, not somehow of the government primarily. You do somehow investment decisions, entrepreneurial decisions that are not, that don't meet any consensus, any favor in the market, and you should face this and eventually revise your business strategy. This, I think, remain the golden rule. Yet, of course, new buildings and new projects are implemented. I honestly struggle to find the economic ratio behind all these constructions, but I'm also confident that if developers keep on building, they imagine that they can sooner or later sell those properties. From a policy perspective, what can be done, I think, is look carefully at how construction authorization are given, and therefore to act at the source of the problem rather than at the end after the projects are implemented. So engage with the developers in a more deep discussion when they ask for the permission to build and see if the project is really something that can meet market expectations.
We're going to take a short break right now and we'll be back after this. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're tuned into the Property Show on the Morning Run. I'm Sim Wee Boon, and with me today is Dr. Carmelo Felito, CEO of the Center for Market Education and a Senior Fellow at IDEAS. We've been taking a bit of a check on the property landscape in Q3, and now we're going to talk about Q4. So I want to ask you, Doctor, what's your gauge of the property price trends, as in like how has it changed and how might it change from now until maybe the end of the year?
Okay, of course, without having the pretension to have a crystal ball, but I think that we have a trend that emerged already in the past couple of years. And this trend is that prices are cooling down, are stabilizing. So they are not growing anymore at the pace that they were used to grow around the years 2010, 2013. They are growing in nominal terms very moderately, which means that in real terms, so purified by the inflation, they are slightly decreasing. And in the past couple of years, even they grew less, even in nominal terms, less than wages. That means that in relative terms, somehow homes are slightly more affordable. I think that this trend will somehow remain, at least for another year. And this is all the more true at the light of the pandemic. So I don't expect prices to go up. At the same time, prices tend to be sticky. So we cannot expect also a dramatic decline in prices. They will remain, at least for the primary market, pretty much stable. Where instead I see quite a correction is on rent. Here prices in certain areas are going down in sensible ways, even down 30%.
So in some ways it actually becomes a rentals market?
This is the typical scenario in a mature property market where the rental market plays a growing role. And so this is even, I think, confirmed by the fact that we cannot expect returns from properties like we were expecting 20 years ago. Let's say you buy at half a million ringgit and you expect to sell at 2 million ringgit in a matter of 10 years. I think that this kind of trend is gone forever, and a profitability of 10-15% can be already considered quite generous, at least in the short run. With this scenario ahead, probably, and also with the issue of household debts and more uncertainty, even by the extension of the pandemic, I think that the rental market will play a growing role.
Well, then, at the risk of having you peer into your crystal ball again, given what we know now, do you think the property market will see recovery coming into 2021, and perhaps what might be driving it?
Depends very much what you mean by recovery. If you expect, I think, a huge jump up in transactions in the primary market, I think this is not going to happen. I think that there will be quite a long path toward a real recovery or a new expansionary cycle of the property market. While we may see, I think, a more vibrant movement in the secondary market and in the rental market.
Okay, but a big stimulant we can look at is Budget 2021. What measures would you like to see included by the government in Budget 2021 to perhaps spur the construction industry, spur the property market then?
It's difficult to say. So what I don't want to see is monetary easing, because this may prolong even, let's say, that the feeling that constructions can go ahead forever. So this is not something that I would like to see. I don't expect, honestly, other kind of measures. Probably the only measures that can help a bit would be if other states would follow Kuala Lumpur in lowering the threshold for foreigners. This, I think, would be a very reasonable move. With all the exception of the case, in a paper a couple of years ago, I was proposing to abolish the threshold for foreigners, for those foreigners that have lived in Malaysia for a certain number of years, paying regularly tax. So those people that are actually contributing to the local economy and having a life like Malaysians, so spending their money in Malaysia. I think that this could be something that can help in a little bit the recovery of the market.
And perhaps even address the unsold property hang that we have.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes. Because, you know, there are thresholds like in Selangor, where the threshold is currently 2 million. I mean, it's quite an important amount of money and quite a financial commitment if you decide to invest 2 million ringgit in a property. And also the nature of the foreigners living in Malaysia is changing. We don't have only, rich oil and gas expatriates. The scenario is much more variegated. We have teachers, we have middle-level management. So people that would not think to buy a house at 2 million ringgit, but probably at less than 1 million, they would do so.
What would be your main concerns moving forward that might kind of put stumbling blocks in any form of recovery that we have?
I think that what will be required by this government or by any future government in order to really move from containment policies to recovery strategy is developing something on international borders. As far as international borders remain 100% shut down like they are now, we cannot imagine any kind of recovery for Malaysia and the rest of the region. So this doesn't mean to open 100% full-blown immediately and tomorrow, but to imagine and to start discussing with neighbor countries a sound strategy for reallowing business travelers and tourists into the country. This will give the real boost to the economy, I believe.
All right. Thank you very much for being in the show.
Thanks to you for having me. It was a pleasure.
That's all the time we have for today's Property Show. That was Dr. Carmelo Ferlito, CEO of the Center for Market Education and a senior fellow at IDEAS. I'm Sim Wee Boon, signing off for the Morning Run. We've got a 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, followed by Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.